Hello, this is Real Estate Insights, the podcast from Savills that delivers opinion and analysis on all the most important issues in the property industry. And delivery is sort of what we're all about today as we take a look at what operators, developers and investors in the logistics sector are thinking about 2025 and beyond.
The pace of change now is the quickest it ever has been and the slowest it ever will be in the future. Change is the new norm.
We never talk about logistics to anybody at school, and that's problematic because we're expecting 8% of the workforce to be working in logistics.
3PLs have got grey space, they have got vacancy, but to win a new contract they need to go take a new building for that contract to meet the end customer's ESG requirements.
I'm Guy Ruddle and I've had delivered to the studio three people who probably know more than is healthy about warehouses. So let's start with Toby Green, who's National Head of Industrial and Logistics at Savills. And Toby, you've been in this area, the sort of logistics area, for what, more than 20 years, right?
21 years, Guy.
And you've seen it go from, you know, being sort of sitting in the corner of the office to the absolute rock stars of the property world. How have you managed the fame?
Oh, well, you know, it's been building steadily, so we haven't got too far ahead of us.
And right now, and you know, having had that, it's not been the easiest time with the last few years, so you've had to negotiate that as well.
I think the market was growing steadily from post-GFC 2013 kind of onwards, and, you know, it got to a significant level in 2019, and then we just got the shot in the arm of COVID, and you know, it was a sort of unreal time, and I don't think something that we will see again. You know, 2023 and 24 are back to those pre-COVID levels.
Yeah. Dave Travis is head of the Manchester office of Tritax Big Box Developments. Hello, Dave. Welcome to the podcast. First time here. Tell us a bit about Tritax.
Tritax Big Box Development. So we're the development arm of Tritax Big Box, FTSE 250 listed fund. We are large scale, one of the largest investor developers, specifically in logistics in the UK. £6 billion portfolio. Look, delighted to be here this morning.
Excellent. And our third guest is Claire Bottle, who is CEO of the UK Warehousing Association. Hello, Claire. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi.
What does the UK, I mean, it's probably a bit obvious, but what does the UK Warehousing Association do?
We're a trade association. We represent 1,000 member companies, and we've got a very simple four-part mission. We talk about warehousing, including to the government and the media, as well as amongst ourselves. We raise industry standards, we build community, and we help our members.
I'm really glad I asked that stupid question now. That was really good. Right, come on, let's get stuck into this topic. I should probably start by saying we're talking about this today because of the publication of the annual Future Space Report, which is done by Savills and Tritax Big Box, and takes the temperature of all the main players in the industry. And actually, you three have all come straight from the launch of the report. So we're in a perfect place to talk about this subject. Dave, let's start with you. What is the report sort of telling us about the state of the industry at the moment?
I think the conversation we had this morning, I think we're in a more positive place than a negative place. I think, you know, there was a lot of debate that we had about change and the pace of change. From what I've seen and what we're looking at in terms of the vacancy rates of new build and secondary stock, there is an obvious flight to quality. I think we're just at that tipping point of the flight to quality. And I think we're in that position now where you think back to what a normal market used to be. This is what I call as a normal market, to be honest. You know, buildings do stick around. There's a reason why there are voids in appraisals. Not everything lets before you've even literally got a plan through a planning application. But equally, you know, you look back at the challenges that are still there in planning and delivery, they haven't changed. It's still more difficult to bring stuff forwards. There are more challenges in terms of labour, power, water, the rise of AI and all the conflicting bits that we're in. And it's an interesting time, but do you know what? It makes it fun to do what we do.
And we'll come back, I think, to pretty much all of those topics in a minute. But Toby, from, you know, what Dave's saying and what you were sort of hinting at earlier, it's not been the easiest couple of years?
Well, I think, you know, what people forget is that online growth was strong before COVID. You know, from post-GFC, from sort of 2013, 2014, Amazon were in the market and pretty dominant, acquiring a huge amount of space. And then we got into this slightly unreal place through COVID, of where we got this huge shot in the arm, and we had a 2 to 3 year period, which, you know, is unlikely we'll see the like of again. And then so we've now come back to take up levels along the long-term average levels, sort of 2018, 2019 level. Amazon are back in the market and very aggressive, looking to expand. So online is still there and still a major part of a driver for the industry.
And Clef, for your members, that sort of situation that's being described of you know, quite a lot of change, you know, quite quickly, that can either be, you know, very exciting and an opportunity, or it can be, oh my word, what's going on, and I want to retrench a bit.
Well, I think part of what we're seeing in the report is a bit of a dichotomy in the story about confidence. We're definitely seeing a more favourable view of the market from investors and developers. And the occupiers, who are my members, and my members are skewed a bit towards third-party logistics occupiers. So particularly, you know, companies that operate warehousing where they're storing on behalf of another customer who's the owner of the goods. That's not such a cheerful market right now. We're seeing a lot of what I call empty racking, and which property people would call grey space. And that's not reflected in the vacancy rate. The vacancy rate is about buildings which don't have a tenant in at all. The grey space, which I think is causing concern amongst my members, is where they're an occupier of a building and they wish that building was full, but it's not.
Guy, I thought it was really interesting. In the survey, one of the big responses was influence from the customer. And I think that plays to the 3PL world quite a lot. So I think what we're seeing on the agency side is that 3PLs have got grey space, they have got vacancy, but to win a new contract, they need to go take a new building for that contract to meet the end customer's ESG requirements. So I think we've got, you know, the stats show strong demand from 3PLs, but 3PLs also have a lot of vacant space. So I can see why there's a challenges out there for them.
So I'd like, if we can, because I mean, there's a sort of some big overarching themes, and you know, there are issues for everybody in those things, for occupiers, for investors, and for developers in that. So why don't we sort of take a little bit of a look in more detail, perhaps, at the situation for each of those types of people. So, Claire, just to stick with you for a bit. So we've talked about the issues around grey space for your occupiers, and we've talked about overall demand a bit. What are the other things that your occupiers, your members are thinking about the future, and the things they need to not necessarily worry about, but be conscious of, and might change the industry a bit?
Well, we've seen it in the report, and there's a big concern about labour. The availability of good quality people in management roles, and then also being able to attract new entrants into warehousing who are going to take some of those entry level roles, where there are often really good career prospects, but one of the problems, I think, is that in our national curriculum and in our schools, we never talk about logistics to anybody at school. And that's problematic because we're expecting 8% of the workforce to be working in logistics. So there's a programme partly funded by the government and largely funded by industry called Generation Logistics, which is all about promoting those career opportunities. I have to mention the budget as well, though, if I may, Guy, because I don't think the rise of minimum wage is necessarily a big issue for occupiers, partly because we don't have a lot of people on minimum wage in warehousing. I think the thing that might be more problematic is the changes that we're going to see coming in April to national insurance, because that was a double whammy, wasn't it? Not only has national insurance gone up from 13.8% to 15%, but also the floor at which you don't have to pay any national insurance, well, that's dropped right down. So more and more people are in scope. And I think that will have an impact on the workforces in our warehouses.
And one last thought on this before we start talking about developers and investors and things. What about sort of technology change?
Well, you know, over the last 30 years, some of this is not new tech, but we've seen the introduction of cranes and robots and conveyor belts. And what's even more exciting, or, you know, it's mesmerizing to watch the equipment, but what's really exciting is the software that goes behind it, that's, you know, guiding those bits of equipment what to do in order to take some of the pressure off the labour problem that I was talking about. And also, you know, it makes goods more secure. You're less likely to get damages and mistakes if you're using an automated system. But only about 15% of warehouses have that kind of automation. So lots and lots are still relying on racking and forklifts.
I thought that was surprising how low that is. And given the responses to the survey was that automation was right up there. And given that the survey went out before the National Insurance contribution hike, they were already talking about responding and more automation. And we'll have to see how that goes. I mean, DHL have recruited 96 graduates focused on AI, engineering and tech roles rather than property side of things. So a huge international business like that is certainly taking it very seriously.
And I think just in terms of what Claire said previously about awareness of logistics as an industry does feed through to us as developers. And again, you know, I won't get into a long conversation on planning and the planning system, but that awareness of local authorities, the planning decision makers, local councillors, the public in general, there is an education process that needs to be gone through to show them and prove to them the high value jobs that come from logistics and warehousing, because there is such a battle at the moment where the first answer you get back is it wants to be advanced manufacturing, we don't want logistics. And anything that we can do to wider educate to try and take the brakes off is for the benefit of UK PLC.
Traditionally, when we're talking about the property world and investors and operators and developers, the developers are the most optimistic, because they have to be, really, because they're the ones who are sort of saying, well, we want it to be good so that we can develop more buildings. Are you reasonably optimistic at the moment?
I mean, what we do is long-term by nature, you know, and again, some of the 6, 7, 8 million square feet multimodal logistics hubs that we've got, they're 15 years in gestation. So, I mean, to a certain extent, you're looking past cycles because you have to. I'm a firm believer in, as an industry, we can talk ourselves down and confidence breeds confidence. And ultimately, you know, the pace of change now is the quickest it ever has been and the slowest it ever will be in the future. Change is the new norm.
Is there a danger, Dave, that we end up with too much supply? And I'm talking specifically, you know, when Claire was talking about there being, you know, a need for a new types of warehousing, yes, but then you've got existing warehousing, which has got lots of grey space in it. Can you not adapt that and change that rather than building a new place?
I think if you look at a lot of the occupiers in terms of what matters and what matters in terms of automation and AI coming forwards, the two things that are three things, actually: floor loading, eaves height, roof loading. You can't retrospectively fit that to space. You know, the technology is moving that quickly. Occupiers are having to effectively move that quickly and advance that quickly.
I think, you know, I mean, obviously, over the last 10 years, we've invested a lot in research. And so, you know, data is everything. And I think all our clients are very much look at that when they're spec building. You know, you don't want to make a massive investment. You want to use all the data correctly and make sure it's right first time. And I think to the supply piece and the grade A piece, I think occupiers do want flexible space. And that means grade A, which has the adaptability in the future. But are we going to continue to be able to grow the eave sites of buildings, which occupiers want? There's massive planning challenges with that. So we've gone over the last 10 years on a journey from where a big logistics building was 12 metres, say, to maybe 18 to 21 metres. But I don't think the planners are going to allow us to go further. So in the future, is there a point where retrofitting, refurbishing, repurposing existing shells of buildings becomes a better bet than new development, because you cannot force the eaves on further with the planning system?
And we're seeing, I think, perhaps a shift towards different kinds of activities taking place in warehouses where mezzanine floors are important, and perhaps eaves height isn't always going to be not for every application the most important thing. Some things that used to take place in factories are being pushed down the supply chain to take place in warehouses. So, for example, you know, preparing of gift packs or picking and packing, that kind of activity can be done on a mez. Similarly, you know, some of the things that used to take place in the retail high street are being pushed back up the supply chain as well. And those more dexterous manual activities don't necessarily always require the eaves height, but the automation does. So it's probably about getting the right balance and getting the right application.
And I think if I can, just sort of coming back on Toby's point there, quote from Mark Twain, buy land, it's the one thing they ain't making any more of. And, you know, ultimately, we are an island. We have greenbelt challenges. We have effectively that agenda in terms of the expansion of cities and where it should be. And I don't think that's logistics. I think it's the same in terms of residential as well. You know, you look at all of the smaller island nations across the world, look at how high the residential buildings go in comparison to what we do in secondary cities. And again, I think that's something as a public, as the process goes on and as effectively time moves on and there's continual growth in the economy, there is only one way to go, and that's up, because ultimately going out and the sprawl into more of the green belt and effectively that check on population growth, we can't expand the borders of the country, effectively stays with where it is.
Do you think we'll see intensification and co-location, where I think in other countries, for example, you might have student housing on top of a warehouse? Is that the sort of thing we would get in the UK?
I think we looked at that very seriously during the boom times, you know, when you've got low yields and before build costs started to rise with inflation. When you try to run an appraisal on those mixed uses currently, it's very, very challenging.
And there's a certain amount of, I think, the British way of doing things. And, you know, we've seen that in terms of the modular housing sector. It's something that came, it's something that has now effectively negotiated down. And, you know, it's, I think there's a process that has to go through as an education process.
It comes down to choice ultimately as well. If you've got choice of alternatives, you're not going to want to go up and locate on a higher floor. It's perfectly acceptable and the norm in the Far East, and occupiers are ready to do that and occupy those buildings. But as you say, in England, we're not used to it. And if you can do something else, you generally won't.
So we'll come to tell me something I don't know in a minute, which is our sort of little nugget of thought that's your payback for being on the podcast. But before we do that, there's one big sort of, maybe not elephant in the corner of the room, but one big topic we need to talk about, which is sort of ESG and energy, supply of energy to warehouses and all that sort of thing. Toby, what do you have a sort of overarching philosophy of how to deal with this whole area?
Well, ESG has been a massive topic for the 8 years that Futurespace has been running. But it was started by the investors. They're the ones who've gone early on it and built the buildings. The occupiers have been behind the curve, mainly because they're worried about the cost of doing that. What we have seen in this year's survey is that ESG has risen up strongly in terms of the importance of those occupiers. I think the bit which doesn't get talked about that much in the market is that to build a building for Tritax, it's considerably more expensive than it is to build one without those ESG features. But we're at a point where everyone has to build to a certain level to be competitive. So we're not comparing apples with apples in terms of past build costs. So this has also been an element of why we've seen rental growth. There's a cost push element to rents needing to go up because you're getting more from your building. You're getting greater efficiencies from it. And the other piece that was big in the survey was about running costs. It was about costs of your labour, but it was also about cost of fuel and cost of power. Those were actually the three highest responses from the report. You need a building to perform for you to make sure that you've got those under control.
And just to get the same amount of power that we've used in the past, we're shifting away from fossil fuels towards electricity, hopefully green electricity. And so even just to stand still, we need the national grid to do so much more.
This might be a bit too specific as a question, but in terms of buildings generating their own energy, surely a warehouse has got to be right up there as the most likely to be able to do that. You know, big flat roof, lots of solar panels, et cetera. I mean, you would have thought that, I don't know how much, you know, how much you could possibly generate, what percentage of your own electricity you could generate if you were really efficient.
I can give an indication of that. So roughly speaking, if you're running an ambient warehouse and you put solar panels on a quarter of the roof, then during the daytime, that will be all used up. Whereas if you're running a temperature controlled warehouse, you could cover the whole roof. And then during the daytime, you'll need at least four times as much electricity as is being provided by those panels.
Yeah, look, and we, as a fund and as a developer, you know, we appreciate this is something we have to do. It does ultimately come back to the throttle is the grid, because, you know, unless you've got massive batteries at a massive cost to fill a million square foot warehouse. And again, that's something which, like solar panels, the cost of solar panels has come down because ultimately it's taken a bit of time to get it through. It's the same with batteries. Power capacity, power export from roofs goes back to the same substation. It's the same substation where you get import. And ultimately, if that substation is not big enough, it doesn't matter how much power you can connect on people's roofs, you can't do anything with it.
I feel we could talk about this all day, not just because there's a lot to talk about, but because there's rarely more passion in the studio than there has been today. But we've all got day jobs to go and do, so we'll wrap it up there with Tell Me Something I Don't Know. So this is a little nugget, as I say, of information which just shines an extra little bit of light on the sector, perhaps. Where should we start? Well, let's go round the table. We'll start on, not that anyone listening knows who's sitting where, but let's start on my left. Claire, tell us something we don't know.
So right now in the UK, only 5% of warehouses have any solar panels on the roof. And yet, if we took a small proportion of those warehouses which are ready to have solar, we could double the amount of solar power in the UK, just on warehouse rooftops.
I mean, good luck, guys. That's absolutely amazing. It just also makes me want to ask so many questions, but never mind. Toby, tell us something we don't know.
So with consistent take-up over the last couple of years, in Q4 24, we saw an 11% rise in requirements. Savills have an index, and that's encouraging going forward. January has started off really fast. The early data looks 100% up on 2024 levels, so we look set fair for 2025.
That's a nice positive thing from Toby. Dave, tell us something we don't know.
I think this is more a prediction than anything. I think we're right at the precipice as to what prime, secondary and tertiary actually means. And I think a lot of that will be driven by availability of power, the rise of AI, what that means to the labour force, what that means to clients and occupiers. You've seen a massive amount of space that's been delivered in tertiary locations because they are cost effective. But you see the amount of planning permissions in tertiary areas where now there is no occupational interest there, ultimately, because all the bits that clients of ours, and the same with Claire and obviously with Toby, are looking at is changing so rapidly. And it's something that as an industry we have to, I think, look forward to and be very nimble of.
Excellent. I feel not only wiser, but better informed than I did, well, half an hour or so ago. Thank you all so much for that. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you in the studio. If you want to delve into the detail more, you'll find plenty in the Future Space 2025 report, which is available on the Tritax website, but also, of course, on the Savills website. On the Savills website, it is at savills.co.uk/research. That's it for this episode. Thank you three very much for being here. Thank you very much for listening, and see you next time.
This podcast is for general information only and should not be considered professional advice. Savills accepts no liability or responsibility for any direct, indirect, or consequential loss arising from the use of, reference to, or reliance on this podcast or its content. Savills makes no warranty as to the accuracy of the information in this podcast. This podcast and all copyright in this podcast is the property of Savills, and it shall not be used, reproduced, or quoted in whole or in part without Savills' prior written consent.